On Point, hosted by Peter Van Aartrijk. Conversations with interesting and informative experts on technology, branding, culture, social media marketing, and other great topics.
Hello again, everybody. I'm Peter Van Aartrijk, your host for On Point, brought to you by our good friends at Wells Media, which includes Carrier Management, Insurance Journal, and other fine publications. Our guest today is Jay Grayson. He's the CEO and co-founder of Surround Insurance. For those who can surf safely as they're listening to this conversation, you can check out surroundinsurance.com. Surround like surround yourself with friends, insurance.com. Welcome, Jay.
Thanks, Peter. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I think this is kind of cool what you've done with your new company. Tell us, before we get into Surround Insurance and what it's all about, I got a ton of questions for you, but maybe you could help the listeners understand a little bit about you. I think you're pretty new to the insurance industry, or maybe not, but certainly this is a new company. But about your background a little bit, and maybe some sharing how you got to where you are with your career today.
Yeah, well, Surround is a startup. It's one of these new insurtechs, and where we're trying to innovate insurance around the consumer and what new consumers are doing in today's world. I've got 15 years in the property and casualty industry. I spent 13 years at Liberty Mutual, moving around different parts of the business. I entered through their executive development program in 2005, was part of their corporate finance group, where Liberty acquired Safeco Insurance, Ohio Casualty, and did some complex transactions into agency distribution from direct distribution on the commercial side. I also spent the second half of my career there in the personal lines business unit there, which has about 12 million policies. It's a fairly large business. It's where the Safeco Insurance brand and the Liberty Mutual brands come together, where I ran customer experience operations for a bit and strategy as well. So pretty deep property and casualty experience. Prior to that, spent time in technology, finance, and if you go way back, grew up in upstate New York. I am the son of a immigrant from Taiwan, and grew up in a very, very interesting world in upstate New York, where it really sort of formed the foundation for what we are thinking about and driving towards it at Surround in terms of diversity, inclusion, and equity as well.
Oh, man, I love that. We have to unpack that a little bit later. So let me put you on the spot with a question you may not be ready for, but what do you think, if agents were going to exist down the road, do you think independent agent versus captive is the best model?
Yeah, I mean, there is no doubt in our mind that independent agents are absolutely going to be a vibrant and a sustainable channel for the future. You know, if you look back over the last 20 years and the way that the industry, market share, different parts of the industry, to your question, clearly direct has taken some share over the last 20 years, but agency surprisingly has held share. So really direct is taking share from that captive agent. You've obviously seen a lot of strategic moves by big established companies with captive agency channels that are making acquisitions or doing some strategic growth plays to expand outside of those channels. So we are big believers in the agency channel. We're actually exclusively distributing our products to the agency channel, which is kind of counterintuitive. When you think of many of the insurtechs, they're really focused on going direct to consumer. A lot of the investors are driving that investment to go direct to consumer. And we think the agency channel is a really underserved area of opportunity. If you're creating digital enablement or you've got new products, that's actually where we think is a really good spot to be if you're catering to the independent agent.
All right, let's talk about Surround Insurance. Are you guys a carrier or MGA agency?
Great question. We're a managing general agency, or maybe you could call us a managing general underwriter because we do have power of the pen. What we've done is we've actually designed our own insurance products. So we're starting with a few different products we'll talk about in a moment. But we've paired up with accredited surety and casualty, which is rated excellent by AM Best. And we've got one of the world's largest reinsurers backing them as well. So just a really nice set of partners that we've managed to build our first products around.
Okay. So let's talk about the company. What do you do?
Yeah, we like to say when we're talking to agents that we help agents with the digital tools and innovative new products they need to compete in a changing world. We are a B2B2C player, so we're building insurance products for a target consumer, and we're distributing it through agencies. So that is at our core, who we cater to and what we're doing for them. Now, the opportunity that we see in the world is that consumers are doing lots of things that insurance, or at least traditional insurance, was never really designed for. If you think about the last 110 years, auto insurance was really built around that moment of buying a car. Home insurance was really built around the moment of buying a home. And small business insurance, well, it's around starting a small business. But when you look and you see what consumers are doing in the world today, they don't need to own homes or cars or start small businesses when they're just getting going in the world, out of college or maybe a little bit after grad school. They're able to step into borrowed or rented cars and drive them. They're renting apartments, they're hosting and they're staying, and they're freelancing and gigging. So for us, we're reimagining insurance around what these consumers are doing in the world in ways that traditional insurance just don't do. We're essentially building products matched to their lifestyles. And we do this by using new techniques in technology and analytics and design to basically unbundle insurance into the bits and bytes of coverage and then repackage it in ways that feel very personalized and tailored to their lifestyle. So at its core, we're building lifestyle-based insurance.
That's so interesting because a lot of the direct response carriers, and captive too, like Liberty actually, they have this term now called bundling, Like, buy car and home insurance and save some money. Even though you could, when you dive in, you could really see some issues with the liability limits, for example, is where most of the savings might be. And that's not always good for the consumer. So tell me more about what you mean by unbundling.
Yeah. When you really look at the way insurance evolved over the last, really it's over the last 400 years, 500 years, and we're not going to go that far back in setting the stage. But if you look at the nature of a contract, those of us within the industry, we sort of know, you've got to define it. You define a set of coverages in which that product essentially is catered around and filed for. And then you've got a set of rules around it, exclusions, right? But like, if you look at these contracts at their core, the way that these lines have been drawn according to these contracts was really sort of determined in sort of the 50s and 60s when you had to use typewriters and you sold door to door. It's sort of an arbitrary collection of coverages. And so when we look at the world, we think of it as, well, let's start with the customer first. What is this customer actually doing? And what is it that they actually need? And so when we think about their needs, we don't start with a defined contract. We actually think about it at the coverage level. And so that's what we mean by unbundling insurance. We think of those needs. We map those needs to a set of coverages that are at the sort of the atomic level of these contracts. And then we package up those atoms into molecules, which basically make up our starter packs of insurance. Consumers are used to the words bundling, like you said. And, bundling does have some advantages. It also does have some drawbacks as well. We tend to think of it in terms of our language is really in terms of packs of coverage or starter packs of coverage, rather than using the word bundling to these consumers.
So let's walk through. I got a ton of questions for you, and I'm glad we're chatting because this whole thing about the insurance policies being, hundreds of years old, at least decades old, all in capital letters, all incomprehensible, a lot of jargon. A lot of acronyms and initials, and it just seems like it was all handled by lawyers. Like it was all, these legal contracts that get everybody in trouble, a lot of times, because there's like, well, my claim's not covered. Well, you didn't read the contract. I can't read the contract. It's incomprehensible. So it's just game we've been playing, and I understand the seriousness of a contract and why we have contracts, but I'm really, really intrigued by this idea that we can't keep doing what we've been doing as an industry, because it's not just the gig workers from their perspective. It's the industry's perspective and what they sell and who works at those insurance companies. I mean, it's so widespread in terms of the ramifications of this change we're seeing. But I think maybe I could benefit, maybe the listeners could benefit from maybe you walking through an example of one of your customers, one of your policyholders, who has this these bits and bytes in its package for their life. Is that possible to do?
Yes, so we've conducted hundreds of interviews for these consumers. So, sort of, I'd ask the listeners to have in their mind's eye this consumer that's somewhere in between, 22 and 35 years old. We think that there's 10 to 15 million of them living in the urban core, and what they're doing is they're renting an apartment. They don't have a car that they lease or own, but rather they rent or borrow cars. And they, freelance for extra income. And whether out of necessity or preference, they are living in what we call the access economy. They're able to access these assets in a very easy way using these platforms that people are very familiar with. So Zipcar and Turo and Getaround for cars, or Upwork and Catalant for freelancing, or just apartments.com as people are renting. And so, out of the 80 million consumers living in that age range, roughly 10 to 15 million of them are living this sort of access economy lifestyle. So what they want is insurance that really whose expectations have been set from outside the industry. They're using brands like, Stitch Fix and Netflix for different services, and they just expect insurance to be simple, easy, and accessible, and it should reflect their lifestyles. So they don't actually seek out things like, the traditional product categories like renter's insurance. I mean, that's a road that's pretty well traveled. There are obviously some companies out there that are establishing direct-to-consumer brands in renters. But when we do our research, we find these consumers have greater needs than just renter's insurance. They're overpaying for car insurance at the car rental counter. They are either going uninsured or they're overpaying for professional liability insurance for their gig work. And so what we've essentially done is we take a few different products. So the ones that I'll name here are named non-owned auto, which is a great product. It's underutilized and a product that people aren't that familiar with, but it's essentially the car rental insurance on an annual basis at a very reasonable price. Renter's insurance product, which is a very good product, covering your liabilities and your personal property, but it's an incomplete product. It doesn't really cover your moving life. And then we right-sized a professional liability product with limits and coverages that make sense, that lowers the price to get started. And we package that. We do all the insurance-y stuff, like you said. We sort of have to still honor what is a regulatory regime and the statutes. So we still honor that with our policy administration platform. But using our knowledge, my co-founder Kate and myself, between us, have 30 years of total experience. She's a product management expert. What we've done is we've taken all of that complexity and we've wrapped it with a platform on top of it. So the consumer doesn't have to deal with declarations pages and multiple policies to have to sort through and purchase. Instead, what we've done is we've presented them with these different packs of insurance that looks very similar to what they would expect from our research. And we speak to them in ways that are more customer friendly. Again, just like you said, a lot of acronyms in our industry, a lot of terminology that just doesn't make sense around, deductibles and limits and what feels like gotchas. And so we really thought about it from the customer first, then we design the products, and then we think about how we communicate to them, which is really starting to get at branding and marketing and getting people interested in the product itself. So there's
Okay.
a lot to it. There's a lot to it, and it is a very complex product, and it's our job to make it simple for the consumer.
Very interesting. So you mentioned brand. What is the origin of the name of the company, and why is the O underlined in the logo?
Well, there's a nice parody in the where the O is located. I think, very, very early in the journey, as you think about naming and branding, there's the industry sort of like tries to package itself, as either peace of mind or protection. And so, there's a lot of places that you can go. And for us, we started, if you put the customer first, and around the customer, you think about almost a third, a third, a third, moving, living, and working. And that's how they define their lifestyle. And we wanted to make sure that the insurance felt complete so that it not just covered like one category of their life, but it actually surrounded their life. So that was what led us to the name Surround. And then, you know, there's a nice sort of circularity in the O. And actually, the font that we use is a proprietary font we've paid for. It's called Circular Font. And the underline of the O is really to draw attention to it. We like to call it our avatar. It actually kind of looks like a person. And so we wanted the feel of the font and the way that it looked, the highlighting and the emphasis of the O to reinforce the name itself. So there was actually a lot of thought that went into it, trying to get it to this point.
Oh man, if you want to geek out on typography, I'm just the guy to do it.
I wish I had the depth of knowledge. You know, you hear yourself, and then you know you hear about stories of Steve Jobs spending time on typography and the importance of it. I have a great appreciation for it. I certainly can't go too deep on it, though, Peter. I'd love to hear your thoughts on it.
Well, I will say this: it is just a fascinating area when you look at all that goes into. Really, I do like your logo, and I think there's a lot of work that went into it, a lot of thought, a lot of careful thought, and that shows you can't fake it. And I always want to talk to agents about this, and they show me their logos. You know, what do you think of our new logo? You know, and you look at their business card, for example, and it's just something close to terrible. You know, and you know, using like Times New Roman from which is talk about the 50s, so these old, and then he'll say, oh, my wife designed it. You know, you'll have just this kind of, well, I like red, let's just go with red, and that font's okay. Like, you've really, really got to pay attention to these details. And there is elegance in the simplicity, I think is what Da Vinci said, something around that, where when it's simple and clean, that's where you get the sophistication, not when you just throw a bunch of stuff together. So that's why I wanted to ask you about the thought that went into it.
Absolutely. On that point, we do a lot to try to maintain that brand consistency. And you know, what we've done is we've worked with agencies. We have a great UX designer and designer, and she's created a set of brand standards, which you probably wouldn't see with a small startup, that we share with our agents and how we like to see the logo used. The red is what we call Revolution Red. Each of the colors has its own name. And we give them all of our brand standards. Again, as a startup, it's probably, we've over-indexed on that, but we want to make sure that we're creating that consistency for the consumer and maintaining that level of simplicity. It's not easy, and I can't fully appreciate it, but I do understand the importance of thinking about this stuff to some degree and making sure that you've made a conscious decision about how you want to put the brand forward. And we even debated, like, do we pay for the font, this sort of specialty font? But we concluded as a founding team that it was the right thing to do and to move forward with it. So I think it's paid off. And, you know, we'll probably do a brand refresh at some point. I know I've read your book, and, you know, you maybe go through that every 10 years. We'll probably go through that sometime sooner, maybe with series, you know, the next series of financing. We'll see.
Yeah, well, good on you. Good on her for the UX work. I think that's incredibly important. And, you know, you might just do a slight course correction. A lot of brand refreshes are not complete overhauls. They're little tweaks to make sure you're staying modern and staying true to where your brand's going, because you might find down the road that you're going to be going in, you know, some slightly new directions, or you'll have some competition, and you want to make sure you be even more consistent and more unique. And then your brand, the visual identity, the name, logo, tagline will be the way to do that. So, but anyway, it was a good start. So why and how did you do this? I guess those are two completely different questions.
Yeah.
Because the how is the funding and all that sort of thing. But why and how do agents even get involved with you on this?
Yeah, the why is always the ultimate question for us. And you know, if you're talking to me or you're talking to my co-founder Kate, I would say, you know, sort of speaking for both of us, we love this industry. It's a mission-driven industry. You know, I think when we see stories in the media, it's not as your listeners know, and as you know, and as we know, as people within the industry, people are trying to do the right thing for customers all the time. And the moment that our product lives up to its promise is the moment that you pay a claim. And so my co-founder, Kate, and myself, we believe in this industry. We believe in the purpose of our product. And what we worry most about is what we call life's negative lottery moments. Those are the times when things happen that you just, you know, obviously you couldn't predict, and our products are, that is what they were designed for. Those in insurance speak, the sort of low frequency, high severity moments is what we really, really worry for and what we stand for. And we saw together, Kate and myself, as we were working out of the Cambridge Innovation Center in Kendall Square, which is just next to MIT, you get this sort of cross section of entrepreneurship. There's 1,000 startups under one roof at the CIC. You've got a bunch of universities within 5 miles of Kendall Square. You see what's happening with these younger consumers, and whether it's a tragedy in the news of a bike or a bike accident or a pedestrian accident with a vehicle, you know, you see just some really sad stories around, you know, property fires, as an example in Cambridge. There were some recent ones. We just felt, based on what we were seeing and what we know about this industry and about this consumer, that there was a missed opportunity. There is a missed opportunity in serving that younger consumer. The kinds of risks that they're taking, that maybe they're aware of, maybe they're not aware of, the kinds of front page news stories that we were seeing, we just felt like there was a real amazing opportunity for us to take advantage of and step into that opening to be an advocate for and design for these younger consumers, knowing that someday they were going to develop into, you know, consumers that had more complex needs and risks. So, you know, the story of Surround is really about understanding this opportunity in the market with this younger consumer, serving them well, and hoping that you have the right to play later in their lives when their lives change and they buy a car, they buy a home, maybe consider life insurance. We want to be there for them.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. I understand too, you're using some artificial intelligence to help with your packaging, the bits and bytes and things like LinkedIn to learn about the customer?
Yeah. Well, you know, AI is interesting in the early days, which is oftentimes associated with ML. We use the acronym for ML for us is manual labor, mm-hmm. I think, in order to get these things, these models to work. We are doing some new and interesting things around data and data sources. You know, one of the things we wanted to prove was that we could simplify the application process by using the API economy. And so one of our questions in order to unlock the professional liability coverage is we ask you to connect to LinkedIn. And by doing that, you avoid the sort of lengthy professional liability application, but you also opt us into some of your data in a really fast and easy way so we can learn a little bit more about you and verify your professional identity. So we are certainly, over the long run, an artificial intelligence company. It is all about the data. There are some things that we're doing sort of early on to set the stage and the foundation for AI and ML. There are some tests and things that we are conducting, you know, but right now I'd kind of characterize this as more of a product innovation company with data at its core and with AI and ML in its future. I don't want to oversell what we're doing on the AI and ML front until we get there, but we certainly do have that as part of our roadmap.
Jay, you mentioned at the top of our discussion a little bit about your background and your roots and growing up and upstate, I think you said upstate New York. Can you tell us a little more about how that translates to the culture of the company and the culture of the kind of customer, the persona you're going after?
Yes, absolutely. I'd be happy to. You know, I think the way that I characterize it is my mother emigrated to the States when she was 21. She met my father abroad and she followed him here. Mm-hmm. And I was born, you know, about 4 or 5 years later. And she is as a tiger mom really shaped, my upbringing. But I'd also say the environment of upstate New York also shaped, you know, my view of the world. It was not an easy upbringing. You have to, when you look different than everyone around you, you sort of have two choices. You figure out a way to to navigate that world or not. And, you know, I'd say it gave me this sort of ability to I think navigate lots of different, you know, opinions and populations, shaped my own opinions of the world. And, you know, it had me wanting to think about, you know, the kind of world that I wanted to live in. So, you know, I left, I went off to college in Boston, and I've stayed in some large cities since then, between the two coasts. And I, you know, just transitioning to how that impacts us at Surround, you know, as I've done reading and as I talked to, you know, lots of leaders over the course of my career, you really only get one shot at establishing culture up front. Those first few hires, the co-founder or co-founders that you choose, the first employees that you bring on, the advisors and investors that you bring on, all stakeholders really help. They guide and they influence your you know, where the direction of your culture. And so we've been very intentional in the way that we've constructed our company in having a very diverse and inclusive culture, in that. That comes to hiring practices. It's also, we actually have lots of discussions openly about things that we're, you know, doing with intention on LinkedIn about projecting our brand. Mm-hmm. In our hiring practices, out in our job postings, we actually have a quarterly discussion on anti-bias and anti-racism in the workplace, and we have created our own policies, you know, just even as a startup, making sure that we are building a environment that it feels diverse, inclusive, and has a great deal of equity in it. So, so I think that upbringing has really shaped and influenced the kind of company that I want to work for, the kind of company that I want to build. And I've been very fortunate with my co-founder, Kate, to find somebody like-minded in that, and really ensure that we are instilling the values that we believe are important in building a sustainable company. So just very grateful to have people along on the journey that believe in the same things as well.
Yeah, you know, they say the best cultures are corporate cultures are those that where you can't tell the difference between the worker, the employee, the associate, and the customer or the prospect. They're kind of all one and the same, because the brand, the external brand, is kind of the same as the internal brand or the culture. And in the middle, where if you envision an infinity symbol, where that X is in the infinity symbol is core values. And that's exactly what you're describing now, or some examples of core values. And I always think of that Discover card commercial where the consumer calls and the customer calls Discover, and they somebody on the other end kind of rhymes, looks like them. It's basically the same person, the same actor, but they're slightly different. And it's that kind of thing. We're just like you.
Absolutely. So. Yeah. And we believe that diversity of thought gets us to the best outcomes. And, you know, it's embodied in our, we've got a set of operating principles and values as well that we live by. So it's, we've codified it, again, just as a startup, having had the experience of working at large companies, we've put some stuff into the foundation that we think is critical for scaling the business as we begin to start to grow and expand into other states and new product lines.
And if you look at your demographic, your audience, I mean, it's inescapable that any company, not just Surround, but any company's really got to pay attention, because 22 to 35 year olds, these issues, social issues, diversity, et cetera, really squarely on their minds. Like, you can't just sort of fake it. It's essential and becoming increasingly more so.
Absolutely. So, that authenticity, you cannot get around that authenticity. And we have, you know, we've been very thoughtful and tried our best to project that level of authenticity and our beliefs into our marketing, quite honestly. So it's been a fun journey so far, and I'm really looking forward to what we'll be doing as we move forward.
Well, good, Jay. So right now just in Massachusetts, right?
Yeah, we're just recently approved in Massachusetts. We have appointed some really amazing agencies here in Massachusetts that were excited by what we were building even prior to approval. Some of the largest agencies actually in the state, which they've also made the top 100 list in the United States as well. And we are, you know, actively appointing agencies. And like I said, you can only get Surround products exclusively through agents and brokers. So we're always on the lookout for partners that believe in what we believe and are excited about building this sort of bridge to their future clients.
Yeah, Massachusetts has a really strong independent agent channel for sure. Like they do a great job up
number
there.
Number one in the country, Peter. 63% of all premium is distributed through independent agents in Massachusetts. It's really just a great environment for agents.
Yeah, last I checked, they had double the market share in personal lines too than a lot of other states. Maybe even triple in some states where the captives and directs have made more inroads, but. So last question, are you expanding beyond Mass? Like, what are your plans?
We absolutely have plans to expand later this year.
Okay.
When we look at expansion, first off, we want to make sure we've got the model right here in Massachusetts. So we want to be very thoughtful. Franchise value and brand value and the customer experience are very important. We want to make sure we get those right. But we absolutely do have the next 4 to 6 states that we're thinking about. There's a rubric that we run. We like to look, we look at the regulatory environment. We look at the concentration of these millennials and Gen Zers in the city and the networks that they're on. We look at state profitability and we look at relationships that we can leverage within our distribution partners. So, we're looking to probably stay east of the Mississippi. We love the Midwest and we love other states in New England and the New England area and the sort of mid-Atlantic as well.
Okay. Well, Jay, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Peter. You're doing great work here. I really appreciate everything you're doing to get the word out for all these companies and entrepreneurs that are trying to change the world.
Well, thank you. It's a joy. It's my joy. Take care, my friend.
Thanks.
This has been On Point with Peter Van Aartrijk, a podcast presentation of Wells Media Group.